It's the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James, joined today by Scott Yeager. Scott is Chief Environmental Counsel, National Cattlemen's Beef Association, headquartered Washington, D.C. Scott, great to see you.
Great to see you, Tony. Thanks for having me.
So really, your wheelhouse, if you will, are environmental issues, which there are a few environmental issues when it comes to the livestock industry. One we think about fairly often is Clean Water Act. Is that still a hot topic?
Clean Water Act is still a hot topic, and there are so many pieces within it. One of those pieces is WOTUS. I think everyone knows what that is. And, you know, that issue is not dead. Everyone thinks WOTUS is dead. Well, guess what? It's not dead. Trump did sign an executive order a year ago that set the gears in motion to have the 2015 Obama WOTUS rule repealed and replaced, but now that has to happen before we can claim a victory, right? And how that happens is through Scott Pruitt and the EPA going through their administrative process to repeal and replace WOTUS. So that's just one piece, and I'm happy to talk more about that. Groundwater is another piece within the Clean Water Act that we all need to think about and understand how to engage in, because right now EPA is soliciting comments on whether or not groundwater should be regulated under the Clean Water Act. So what I mean by that is, imagine a river, okay? And then imagine a beef cattle feedlot sitting right on top of that river. Clearly, that's no questions. They have to have a Clean Water Act permit for that, right? Because you've got direct discharges. So with this groundwater theory now, it's saying, take that water, put it 5 miles away from the beef feedlot, and then you can still be liable the same way as that original example was. If you have anything that's leaching into the ground, from any nutrients that are going through the ground being carried with groundwater into that surface water 5 miles away, well, now you're still just as liable as that original example. So to us, that doesn't make any sense. And in fact, we believe that the Clean Water Act was constructed to regulate only surface waters, right? And that's what everyone's been living under. So now to say, oh, well, just, and by the way, this stems from an Obama-era memo that was filed with the Ninth Circuit Court. So the EPA's position was, all that groundwater, it's under the Clean Water Act. So if you have anything going to the groundwater that eventually makes its way to a surface water, you have to get a permit. So the opportunity now with Scott Pruitt and the Trump administration is that we can fix that. So they're soliciting comment on that. We've provided comments there, and we need to stay engaged to make sure that they get this right and they erase that Obama-era memo.
So to say that's what needs to happen, is there a path forward to get that done?
Yes, there is a path forward, and it happens through the EPA. So this solicitation of comments that I mentioned, that is the first step to a rulemaking process that the agencies will undergo, that the EPA will undergo, to erase that groundwater theory and to make it strictly just surface waters. Now, at the same time, outside of the agency's walls, there are a number of lawsuits that are happening across the country where environmental groups are suing operations, mining operations, water treatment operations under this theory of groundwater liability. And there's been some that have won, there are some that have lost. So the backdrop here is this litigation swell that's going to lead to probably the Supreme Court taking this case and deciding it, and deciding whether or not groundwater is covered under the Clean Water Act. So that underscores you've got these two pieces moving at once, right? So what we'd like to happen is the EPA under Scott Pruitt fix this before it ever gets to the Supreme Court, so that we know what will happen if Scott Pruitt takes action here, because he's all about making sure that the EPA doesn't overreach, right? And this is an example of that happening. So this is a chance for him to fix that. And if he can do that before the Supreme Court gets their hands on it, we're going to be in a really good place.
So if the EPA could make the case that they can regulate waters that would eventually end up in the surface water, how long before they start looking above and saying, well, we have to regulate above? Maybe it's not water, but just emissions.
So that's a really good question. And there's been a test case that Enviros have pursued at Rose Acre Farms in North Carolina, which is an egg layer operation. And they were basically, this egg layer was sued under the theory that the emissions from their fans, like the feathers, the dust, the particulate from the litter that came out of this fan and then deposited on a water, that deposition had to be regulated. At least it was the Enviro's assertion that that deposition had to be regulated under the Clean Water Act. So, I mean, you're saying it kind of facetiously, but I'm telling you, these trial balloons have been put out there by environmental groups. They're trying to test to see how far they can take these regulatory regimes and how far they can go to really force controls on agriculture. That's one example. But at the same time, you've got things like the Clean Air Act. And I'm kind of transitioning here into that. Maybe that's where you're going with it, so I'll take it there. Clean Air Act, to me, is the sleeping elephant in the room. And as soon as that thing wakes up, it's going to be real angry. It's going to trample everybody. We haven't seen across the country how far the Clean Air Act can go to really regulate agriculture. I think there's a few test cases that we could look at in California and Arizona where you have dust that kicks up that in an agricultural environment, that the state has implemented controls at those operations to keep the dust down. But so that's kind of an example of how this might play out in a Clean Air Act context. But we really haven't seen how this beast unfolds. Clean Air Act works on a ratcheting system. So if you've got, it's a national standard. So for ozone, for example, I think right now it's 70 parts per billion in the ambient air. Every 5 years, EPA goes back and looks at that number and decides whether or not they want to ratchet it down further. Once they ratchet that thing down a little bit past 70, you're going to see a whole lot more counties in this country be in non-compliance with the Clean Air Act. And when that happens, states are going to be forcing further regulation on their agricultural sources, on their farms and ranches, on their anything that is creating more emissions that are regulated under the Clean Air Act. And for ag, that would be ozone, dust, which is particulate matter, both coarse and fine particulate matter, VOCs, ammonia as a precursor to ozone formation. So there's a lot of different stuff that comes from ag that can fall under the Clean Air Act. And I think once the WOTUS, in my kind of, the way I view this whole thing is WOTUS is going to be kind of the bookend to the Clean Water Act. That's going to be the last big controversial thing. And maybe this WOTUS thing keeps happening for a while and we don't get a clear answer on it until it's fully figured out through the courts and the Supreme Court talks to it again. But Clean Air Act, man, that is a whole bookshelf full of books that we haven't even started reading through yet. And it has, I think it's going to have really big it's going to have big impacts to agriculture moving forward.
Let's talk about appropriations, because through the appropriations process, you can put some of these things to sleep. And I'm not talking kill it off, just talking put it to sleep for a little while. Are there concerns as we move through this appropriations process as well?
Sure, and that's a really good point, Tony. And there are two things on the Clean Air Act front that agriculture has benefited from to basically hold off this onslaught of Clean Air Act implementation at ag. One is a defunding rider for greenhouse gas reporting, and another is a defunding rider on Title V permits for livestock, agriculture, and mineral management systems. Once those two go away, I think we're in a whole different world for what agriculture has to think about in terms of regulatory compliance under the Clean Air Act. They're going to figure out if you have to report under the greenhouse gas reporting requirements to figure out if now you need a Title V permit. So those are just two of what is about a dozen, maybe a little bit less than a dozen, provisions that are basically holding off these environmental regulations for agriculture. Stuff like there's a 404 provision that we've worked on to keep in that appropriations bills over the years that would prevent the Army Corps from implementing the dredge and fill permit for normal agricultural activity. So things like that are in there. people probably don't realize this, farmers and ranchers may not realize this, but you've been benefiting from these provisions over the years because Congress has passed these laws that basically says EPA can't do this, right? And if those were to go away, in September when Congress passes an omnibus or passes their appropriations bill and they get signed by the president, I think we're going to have a whole different ball game. Now, maybe it's not so bad under this administration. Maybe this EPA, even now with that newfound power that they're getting by virtue of losing those riders, they're not going to act on it because it's a Scott Pruitt EPA. That's probably true. But when this administration changes, whether that's in 2 years from now or 6 years, that change is going to be a dramatic shift. It's going to be a pendulum swing in the opposite direction, right? And then you're going to have an EPA there that's a lot different than this one, and it's probably going to want to go out and start implementing some of these requirements in agriculture.
And we talk about the appropriations process, but why might it change? What's changed on the appropriations side to even cause concern?
A big change in the Senate is Shelby. Senator Shelby has taken the reins on the Senate Appropriations Committee. Now, prior to that, it was Thad Cochran had control of Senate Appropriations. He was really sick last year. He stepped down from that post. He was in the hospital much of last year and really had a step back. So now with Shelby in control of the Senate Appropriations Committee, he has a different vision for how this works. He wants it to happen faster, and he wants all of these bills to be more bipartisan, right? So a lot of these things that we've benefited from were really a Republican-led efforts to put these provisions in the bills to help agriculture. Now, if you're looking at it through Shelby's perspective and you want this to be bipartisan, well, a lot of those things are probably going to fall away. Some of those helpful environmental riders that have protected ag, there's not a lot of Democrats that have stepped up to support those. They're not really bipartisan. So we're probably going to see a number of those riders fall away here. And I think that underscores the earlier conversation we had with we need to be prepared for what's coming. So that's part of what we're doing here while we're trying to protect those provisions. We're also mapping out, well, what happens next once manure hits the fan. So that's the way we look at it. One of the conversations that's happening on EPA right now is a conversation about air emissions estimating methodologies for agriculture. It's a long way of saying, how do you count what's being emitted into the air from a ranch or from a beef feedlot? What's coming off the manure stockpiles? What's coming off the retention ponds? And what does that look like, right? To this point, there is no way to do that. There's been some attempts at it, but really no really solidly scientifically supported way to do that. I'll tell you that there are conversations happening right now at EPA to figure that out. So we're engaging in those conversations. I think if we have to go there, and which we will have to go there eventually, it's best to do it under this administration rather than pushing it off to what might come next. We don't want this to be in control of a Cory Booker administration or Kamala Harris administration, where they're really going to create an end product that is probably not going to benefit agriculture. Whereas under this administration, we know that they're going to work to do something that's unbiased and at the very least, gives the benefit of the doubt to agricultural producers. So we'll see what happens here. But like you said earlier, there's never a lack of things to do when you're working on EPA issues. There's always something happening. So we'll keep at it.
You can find out more online at beef.org or ncba.org. Guess a couple of websites that we could steer to, right?
Yes, sir. And also, check out our Twitter. It's at Beltway Beef, and we have a lot of good content up there. So check us out. Stay engaged.
Scott Yeager, Chief Environmental Counsel, National Cattlemen's Beef Association, on today's Agribusiness Report.